Imagine it's the 8th century. You're walking along this dusty, vibrant expanse of the Silk Road right in Tang Dynasty China.
Oh, just a casual Tuesday.
Right, exactly. So you duck out of the noise of the market and step into this quiet, shadowed room. And inside, there is a Taoist alchemist-like, a literal master of internal energy, and sitting right next to him is a mystical Christian monk who traveled thousands of miles from the West.
It sounds totally made up, like historical fiction.
I know. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
But they are sitting there comparing notes, and as they talk, they begin to realize something that should be impossible. They are mapping the exact same hidden corners of the human mind.
Yeah, that intersection actually happened. And the echoes of that unbelievable meeting, well, that's exactly what we're going to unpack today.
Yes. Welcome to our deep dive into the source material. Today, we are looking at a book that is, honestly, the smoking gun of spiritual history. It's an ancient Chinese esoteric text called The Secret of the Golden Flower.
Right. And specifically, we're looking at the translation by Richard Wilhelm, which crucially includes some absolutely massive paradigm-shifting commentary by the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung.
Yeah. And our mission today for this deep dive is driven by this very specific, unwavering conviction that emerges when you read this text carefully.
Mm-hmm.
It's this realization that Taoism, Buddhism, and Christian mysticism are, at their deepest non-dual core, utterly identical.
Utterly identical. I mean, there is literally no difference between them. Just, you know, different cultural vocabularies pointing to the exact same timeless awakening.
Right, which is a massive claim because,
yeah.
I mean, we spend so much of our lives categorizing things, you know, like this is Eastern, this is Western, this is psychology, that is religion.
Exactly. But what this text proves is that those borders aren't real. And Jung is our constant ally here because he recognized that this text isn't just ancient philosophy. It's, well, it's a literal map of the collective unconscious.
Yeah, the spontaneous structures of the psyche that this Chinese text describes, they're the exact same structures that appear in medieval European monasteries or, you know, in the dreams of modern people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's get into the text itself to see how this actually works. We have a strict two-step process today. Step one, recitation. I'll read a paragraph verbatim. Just let the words be a direct transmission.
Sounds good.
And then step two, the non-dual unity analysis. We will forensically break down how all these different traditions are communicating the exact same reality.
I love it. Let's start at the foundation.
Okay, I have the text right here. I want to start with the source of everything.
Yeah.
From section one, paragraph one. Master Lu Xu says, that which exists through itself is called meaning, or Tao. Meaning has neither name nor form. Is just the one essence, the one primordial spirit.
Okay, let's stop right there and unpack that because it sets the stage for literally everything else.
Yeah, he's trying to put words to something that basically can't be named.
Right, he calls it the Tao or the primordial spirit, but he's super clear about it having no form. Now, if we look at this through the lens of Buddhist contemplative practice, he is describing the Dharmakaya.
Okay, wait, for anyone who isn't like a Buddhist scholar, what exactly does Dharmakaya mean in plain English?
It translates roughly to the truth body of reality. It is the unconditioned, unborn essence of the universe. So it's not some place you go after you die, you know? It's the bedrock of reality right now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and in some Buddhist traditions, they call it the Tathagata Garbha, which basically means the inherent Buddha nature inside all beings. It's that silent, empty ground from which all your thoughts just sort of spring up.
Okay, so formless Tao on one side, empty Buddha nature on the other.
Yeah.
But here's where I have to push back a little bit.
Sure, go for it.
On behalf of anyone listening who comes from a Western background, if you tell a medieval Christian monk that their concept of the divine is the exact same as an empty, formless ground, I mean, they might call you a heretic.
Oh, absolutely, they would.
Because the Western tradition is built on a very personal God, right? A creator with a will, a personality, a relationship to humanity. So how can you possibly say the personal God of Christianity and the impersonal Tao of the East are the exact same thing?
Yeah, that is exactly the friction we need to explore. But to do that, we have to kind of look past the mainstream dogma and look at the Christian mystics.
The ones actually doing the practices?
Exactly. The people who were experiencing these states directly. Take Meister Eckhart, a 14th century theologian. He made this really crucial and very controversial distinction between God and the Godhead.
Okay, how did he separate those two?
Well, for Eckhart, God was the creator, right? The personal entity that the human mind interacts with. But the Godhead is the infinite, undifferentiated divine ground that exists completely prior to the Trinity.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it is absolute emptiness. Eckhart actually said that to truly reach the ultimate, the soul has to let go of the concept of God to fall into the silent desert of the Godhead.
Oh, wow. That sounds suspiciously like the primordial spirit Master Luzu is talking about.
It's identical. And inside the human being, Christian mystics call this the scintilla animae, the spark of the soul. It's that tiny, uncreated piece of the Godhead buried in us.
That's fascinating.
And Jung's archetypal psychology bridges this gap perfectly. Jung called this the archetype of the self with a capital S. It's the imago Dei, the image of God within the psyche.
Right, because Jung realized that terms like personal God or impersonal Tao are just linguistic constraints, right? They're just tools.
Exactly. In the non-dual vision, the duality between personal and impersonal is just an illusion. It's created by the ego's, limited capacity to understand the infinite.
It kind of makes me think of looking at the exact same sky through different windows.
Oh, I like that. How so?
Imagine you're standing in a house built in ancient China, and you look at the sky through a round window. You say, "Oh, the sky is round."
Right.
Then you walk over to a medieval European cathedral and look through a square window, and you say, "No, the sky is square."
Oh, that's perfect.
I mean, the window shapes the view, right? It frames it so your brain can comprehend it. But the sky itself, the source, doesn't care about the window. It's just the sky.
That is a phenomenal analogy. When Master Luzi speaks of the one essence, when Buddhists speak of the luminous mind, and when Eckhart speaks of the Godhead, they are all pointing at the exact same sky. They were just trying not to get distracted by the window frames.
So if this ultimate reality is completely formless, this massive question comes up. How did ancient people even begin to conceptualize it?
Right, how do you draw a map of something that has no boundaries?
Exactly. Well, Master Luzu actually gives us the answer a few paragraphs later.
Let's hear it.
Okay, from section one, paragraph three. The golden flower is the light. The golden flower is a mandala symbol, which I have often met with in the material brought me by my patients. It is drawn either seen from above as a regular geometric ornament or as a flower growing from a plant.
And that's actually Jung chiming in right there in the text, noting the mandala connection.
Yeah, Wilhelm included Jung's insights directly alongside the text.
Which is brilliant. And this is where the how and the why of human consciousness get absolutely fascinating. Let's break down the mechanics of the mandala.
Yeah, why a flower? Why a circle?
Well, in Taoist internal alchemy, they call this the golden flower, or the cauldron, or the golden elixir. It's always a symbol of centered wholeness. And think about what a circle with a center point actually represents mechanically.
Right, because in Buddhism, it's the mandala or the yantra.
Exactly. The perimeter of that circle is the chaos of the external world. It's the scattering of our attention across a thousand different worries and sights and sounds.
Oh, I feel that.
Right. But the center point is absolute stillness. The mandala is a visual map of what Buddhists call the Prapasvarasita, the luminous, enlightened mind.
The luminous mind.
Yeah, it is literally a map of the mind pulling its energy inward, away from the chaotic edges, and resting perfectly in its own center.
And when you look at the Christian mystic expression, I mean, the architecture literally reflects this.
Oh, the cathedral.
Yes. Think of the massive, intricate rose windows of European cathedrals. They are perfect mandalas. Or St. Teresa of Avila's interior castle.
Yes, the concentric rooms.
Right. She described the soul as a crystal castle with these concentric rooms where you have to move through the outer chaos to reach the innermost chamber where the divine dwells.
It is the exact same structure, but
Yeah.
here is the mechanism that absolutely blew Jung's mind. Jung had European patients in his clinic in the 1920s.
Okay.
These were people suffering from modern neuroses. They knew absolutely nothing about 8th century Chinese internal alchemy or Tibetan Buddhism.
I don't think.
Yet when they began to heal, when their psyches began to integrate and find balance, they spontaneously started painting and drawing these exact same golden
Wait,
flowers.
I have to stop you there. Are
Sure.
you saying that an 8th century Taoist and a 1920s Swiss banker are generating the exact same biological state?
Yes.
Because that implies that this spiritual awakening isn't just a philosophy you learn. It's like a hardwired structural reality of the human brain.
That is exactly what Jung concluded. He realized that the human brain structure, and therefore the collective unconscious, operates on the exact same laws regardless of race or culture or era.
That is wild.
Right. The mandala isn't just art. It is the psyche's native, organic operating system manifesting the undivided ground.
Wow.
Whenever a human being begins to integrate their consciousness, the psyche generates these circular, centered symbols to guide the process. Jung called it the process of individuation.
Oh, so the secret of Golden Flower is a master key because it explicitly maps this biological and spiritual reality.
Exactly.
Okay, so the map is a circle and the goal is the center point. But how do you actually get there? We need to move from the theory to the physical mechanics of the practice.
We do.
And Master Luzu gives a very specific instruction for this.
Okay.
From Section 3, Paragraph 3. When both eyes are looking at things of the world, it is with vision directed outward. Now, if one closes the eyes and reversing the glance directs it inward and looks at the room of the ancestors, that is the backward flowing method.
The backward flowing method. This is where we get into the literal mechanics of awakening.
Yeah. What does it mean to reverse the glance?
Well, throughout our normal day, our cognitive energy, our vital life force, is just leaking out into the world. It flows out through our eyes, our ears, our attachments, our anxieties.
Let me break the fourth wall here for a second.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this right now, maybe you're on your commute, driving your car, or walking your dog, you are using outward flowing energy.
Oh, 100%.
Your attention is locked onto the road, the deep dive, the environment around you. But what this text is asking you to do is something radical. It's asking you to look back at the awareness that is currently processing my voice.
Precisely. You are taking the spotlight of your attention, which is usually pointed at the external stage, and you're turning it around to shine on the spotlight itself.
That is such a good way to put it.
And in the Buddhist tradition, this is the exact essence of Shamatha Vipassana, which translates to calm, abiding, and special insight.
Okay, so how do those two pieces work?
The calm abiding is stopping the outward flow. You stop grasping at external forms. The special insight is tracing the radiance back to its source to recognize the true nature of your mind.
Oh, right.
In Tibetan traditions, they call this recognizing Rigpa, the pure, pristine awareness.
You know, when I try to visualize the mechanics of this backward flowing method, I keep coming back to a movie projector.
Oh, I like that. Walk me through it.
Well, we spend our entire lives sitting in a dark theater, staring at the movie on the screen. The screen is the external world. We get completely caught up in the drama, you know, the tragedies, the comedies, the arguments we get into, the bills we have to pay.
Right, the plot.
Exactly. We think the images on the screen are the ultimate reality. We laugh, we cry, we suffer based on those flickering images.
Because that's where the light is hitting the objects. The contrast draws the eye.
Right. But the backward flowing method is simply making the physical and mental decision to turn your head away from the screen.
Yeah.
You look back over your shoulder, up at the projection booth, and you look at the beam of pure light itself.
That's brilliant.
You trace that beam back to the lens. You are no longer fascinated by the plot of the movie. You're observing the pure awareness that enables the projection to exist in the first place.
That perfectly explains the why of the practice. And what's crucial to understand is that this harmonizes all the great mystical instructions. I mean, think about the Christian hesychast monks in the Egyptian deserts during the 4th and 5th centuries.
Right, the desert fathers. They went out into the literal wilderness.
They did, but their real wilderness was internal. They practiced what they called the descent of the mind into the heart.
Wow, the descent of the mind.
Yeah. They explicitly talked about withdrawing their attention from, quote, creatures, meaning all created things, all external phenomena, so they could rest in the divine ground, the cloud of unknowing. They sought the uncreated light.
So it's the exact same mechanism.
Mechanically, psychologically, and spiritually, there is absolutely no difference between a Christian contemplative sinking into the prayer of quiet, a Chan Buddhist tracing back the radiance, and a Taoist practicing the backward flowing method.
It is a single non-dual gesture.
Exactly. Jung would see it as the withdrawal of outward projections and the circumambulation of the self, turning toward the center.
It's all the same movement. But here's where this deep dive gets a twist that I absolutely love. Because we're moving out of the realm of pure psychology and back into tangible history.
Yes, the historical proof.
We asked earlier if a Christian and a Taoist could possibly be talking about the same thing. Well, what if they actually sat down and talked? We find this fascinating note in the text background.
I love this part.
Okay, from the Origin and Contents, paragraph 9. Wilhelm writes, "Perhaps it will strike many a European reader as remarkable that there appear in the text sayings familiar to him from Christian teaching. Except a man be born of water and of the spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. Connections between the Nestorians and the Chintan Shao are quite possible."
This is the historical miracle of this text. Jung and Wilhelm realized that the echoes of Christian esotericism inside this ancient Chinese manual weren't just archetypal coincidences. They were the result of literal physical contact with Nestorian Christianity.
Okay, for those who haven't studied ancient schisms, who exactly were the Nestorians?
Nestorianism was an early branch of Christianity that moved eastward. In Tang Dynasty China, they were known as the Luminous Religion.
Luminous Religion, I love that.
Right, these were Christian mystics who traveled along the Silk Road. And what we find in The Secret of the Golden Flower is living proof of their interaction with Taoist practitioners.
So let's map the mechanics of how their ideas merged, because it's seamless. The Christian text says you must be born of water and the spirit, or water and fire.
Right. And in Taoist internal alchemy, what is the ultimate goal? The creation of the golden elixir, which is achieved through the union of Ixing and Ming Yin and Yang. It is literally the alchemical marriage of water and fire. The Taoists believe that when the abysmal water and the adhering fire of the body are united in the central cauldron, they create the immortal spirit body.
And in Christian mysticism, that exact same union of opposites, the purifying fire and the living water, results in the birth of the word, the Logos, in the soul.
Yes. It's the exact same transformative mechanism. It is the dissolution of the egoic self and the crystallization of the divine nature.
Jung's intuition here was just profound, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. He saw that Nestorian Christianity preserved a deep contemplative current that perfectly aligned with Buddhist non-duality and Taoist alchemy. The Nestorians recognized their own esoteric truths within the Taoist practices.
Right. They didn't see competing religions. They saw different dialects of the same language of light.
Exactly.
It really is this beautiful hidden bridge. I mean, we spend so much of modern history looking at the schisms, you know, the holy wars, the doctrinal debates, the endless arguments over whose God is the real one.
All the surface stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But right there, underneath the surface of history, you have this physical nexus point. It proves that the golden flower isn't exclusively Eastern and the uncreated light isn't exclusively Western.
It completely confirms Jung's theory of a perennial unity. The collective unconscious isn't bound by geography.
Not at all.
When the human psyche reaches its absolute depths, when the ego quiets down and the backward flowing method is really applied, the psyche finds the exact same water, regardless of which cultural well it climbed down to get there.
So let's pull all of this together. We've explored the formless primordial ground, the structural map of the mandala, the physical mechanics of turning our attention backward, and that incredible historical bridge of the luminous religion on the Silk Road.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. So what is the ultimate takeaway from unpacking this text?
Well, the magnificent revelation of The Secret of the Golden Flower is that it lays bare the non-dual heart beating inside all these traditions. There is literally no conflict in the non-dual vision.
Not at all.
Dong was right. In direct realization, the theological arguments and dogmatic divides, they're just surface ripples. Beneath the surface, there are only countless compassionate fingers pointing to the exact same moon.
Wow.
And that moon is reflected in the inner sky of every single human psyche.
You know, we started this deep dive talking about mapping reality. And we usually want a clean map with sharp borders, right? We want a categorical answer.
Everyone wants a neat little box.
Exactly. But what we found today is actually far more profound than a map. We found the territory itself. And the wild thing is, the territory is you.
The territory is the exact awareness that is comprehending the meaning of these words at this exact second.
So we want to leave you with a final thought to mull over on your own today.
Yep.
Next time you have a quiet moment, maybe later today when you turn off the car or right before you fall asleep, close your eyes.
Just for a second.
Yeah. Use that backward flowing method. Turn away from the movie screen for just a second and notice the quiet, aware space behind your daily thoughts. And when you feel that stillness, ask yourself, which vocabulary will you use to describe it?
Will you call it the Tao? Will you call it Buddha nature, the spark of the soul?
Or will you finally realize, as those ancient masters sitting together on the Silk Road did, that the uncreated light shining inside you needs no translation at all?